Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening, Frankenstein doesn't scare him, but marsupials are fast, Mr. Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
Pretty good, John.
Sorry, that was for Tamara Keel, because I did not get a... I did not get a Christopher Walken reference that was posted on my Facebook timeline, and I was forced to promise that I would work that into the show somehow, so there you go. Didn't quite do that one right either, but anyway. We're going to have an interesting show this evening. Joining us is going to be Mr. John Chapman from LMS Defense, talking about the militarization of police and what that means and what it doesn't mean and why cargo pants are evil and scary and have got everyone so upset. So, something like that. Anyway, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. So the internet is on fire right now with all sorts of stuff that I'm probably not going to talk about on the radio. But it's been interesting to just watch all of my industry friends send me messages asking for links to certain things. What else has been going on? Ran a sub-4-second fast drill, the fundamentals accuracy speed test, as made popular by Todd Lewis Green. 394 and a 398, so consecutive. Was pretty happy with that, I'm not going to lie. So hopefully going to try and do that a little bit more. I'm also doing the Ice Bucket ALS Challenge. I know that's probably not as cool as it was a week ago, which I guess that's how the world works. But I'm going to be doing a fast ice bucket challenge type thing probably on Tuesday, maybe tomorrow, we'll see. That should be amusing at the very least, and I'm going to donate some money to charity if I pull it off. So I think the deal is if I get a bucket of ice water dumped on me and then immediately run a sub five fast, I've got, I want to say, $400 or $500 in pledges.
So you do it in January when it's cold and I'll match you dollar for dollar.
Well, yeah, we can do it in January too, but we're going to do it probably now as well, just because I don't think those people are going to wait that long. So anyway, what else is going on? Nothing worth talking about when we've got Mr. John Chapman holding on the line. So why don't we get him on the phone and then we will go from there. So joining us this evening, John Chapman. John, how are you doing?
How you doing, brothers?
Not too bad. How's your evening going?
It's awesome. I'm actually at home.
Hey, that doesn't happen too often, does it?
No, it doesn't. When you live on the road, any time at home is a vacation.
Yeah, I've started to discover that. So, for
yes,
people not familiar with your background, do you mind going into that a little bit and talk about LMS Defense? And that'll probably take us close to the break.
Sure. My name is John Chapman. I'm the founder of LMS Defense. LMS Defense is a full-service training and consulting firm. We focus primarily on domestic law enforcement and international law enforcement services. However, we do some open enrollment citizen training and some military training. My background is I'm a former retired, used-to-be police lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Spent most of my career in SWAT on the West Coast, working for the federal government and some local governments.
Okay.
I've been providing tactical instruction since about 1994.
Okay, perfect.
That's the elevator speech version.
Well, hey, you know, good enough. So when you say that you train mostly law enforcement, domestic and foreign, I mean, not standard stuff. This is more tailored responses to certain situations or more tactics, or what are we talking about exactly?
I do a couple of different things, or actually LMS as an organization does. We provide basic firearms and tactics training for patrol, but the bread and butter of what we do is firearms and tactics training for SWAT teams.
Okay.
Or for tactical teams, teaching them how to deal with unusual occurrences, things that require a more robust response than patrol is equipped or trained to handle.
All right, perfect. And we'll probably get into that a little bit more towards the end of the show, but and obviously, and the subtext behind all of this is obviously what's going on in Ferguson right now, and then the general want for the public to start crying, militarization of police. And I'd kind of like to examine that a little bit, and I thought that you would be a good person to talk about that with, only because I think when people, and in my mind it's a false idea, but when they get an idea about what militarization of the police means to them, that's a lot of what they're talking about is SWAT teams and the SWAT training that those teams receive, right?
Absolutely, and I have kind of a unique perspective on the entire issue because I deal with SWAT teams every week. I'm in front of a different one all the time.
Right. And I think it's interesting, and obviously I'll preface this by saying I don't actually think there is a militarization of the police. And we can get into more depth there, but you and I were talking before the show, and I kind of pointed out, and I stole this from someone else that I saw it, but you know, back in the 1920s, 1930s, when they had someone that they considered dangerous or, you know, an above-average violent criminal, what they'd do is they'd lay an ambush on the side of the road, wait for them to drive past, and then just machine gun their car until everyone in the car was dead. You know, back in the 20s and 30s. I guess that wasn't militarized, though, because they wore, you know, three-piece suits and hats and didn't have cargo pants?
Correct. Frank Hammer wore a business suit when he used a BAR to kill Bonnie and Clyde, so it obviously was not militarized.
It makes it okay, then, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. He was a detective.
Yeah.
Well, a SWAT team member.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have those, then, you know. But it's just funny to me. I mean, in your opinion, is it mostly just perception or just a misunderstanding of what the purpose is for stuff like AMRAPs and things like that that are being, you know, kind of co-opted into police service?
Sure. I think it's primarily a dual-edged problem. The first edge is people barely tolerate the police in the best of times. No one likes being told what to do.
Right.
And a lot of people don't want to – they want to live under the liberty that the police protect and they're necessary to protect, but they don't want to be told what to do or have any restrictions on their own freedom. They want everybody else's to be restricted.
Right.
And I think part of it is also a healthy mistrust of an armed government. That has been a theme throughout our republic, and some of that is healthy.
Yeah.
However, logical thought is required to be a good citizen, and I think a lot of these folks just take what they see or what someone that they respect, be it a rapper or a social commentator of some sort, I think they take that information and just parrot it because they don't take the time to think through and form their own opinion.
Right.
And they don't have all the facts. They don't take the time to get the facts.
Well, and it's funny you mention that because I had Kyle DeFore on the show a couple, 3 weeks ago, I want to say, and we spent a good portion of the time talking about why people shouldn't listen to what he says just because he says it, which I thought was kind of interesting just because to have a conversation with, you know, with a dude like Kyle or yourself or really any of the big industry people, and you hear that a lot. It's like, well, do your own research.
Right.
We got to go to break, John. If you don't mind holding on, I want to kind of examine that a little bit more and maybe talk about some other stuff in that vein. Right now we're talking with John Chapman from LMS Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Grip it, love it, get it, the tough Walther PPX. Then get $100 worth of PPX accessories free. The PPX is Walther's tough workers pistol at a value price. Now get an extra magazine, polymer holster, and dual magazine pouch free with the purchase of a new Walther PPX at participating dealers. Grip the famous ergonomic handle and you'll love it. Shoot it and feel the difference. The Walther PPX, grip it, love it, and get it now. For good with $9.95 shipping and handling. Right now we are talking with John Chapman from LMS Defense about the militarization of police, SWAT teams, and stupid people in general. Should be pretty good. So,
I like that.
You like that?
Yes, I did.
Well, I'm glad. John, are you still there?
Stupid. I am, sir, and stupid people are ruining America.
Well, you know, they have been for the last couple hundred years, so there's nothing really new there.
Yes, sir.
It's just they're all on
Facebook. No, there is not.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's fun. I love my fans. I absolutely love my fans. I love the people that listen to the show. I love the people that interact on the Facebook page, and we've got, what, 121,000 right. followers now and all that. The interesting thing about that, though, is that when you've got that many people in one place that are all commenting on things, the amount of stupid that occasionally occurs is so staggering that it's boggles the mind. It's absolutely wonderful and amazing. So anyway, kind of going back to what we were talking about. So, I mean, the militarization of the police.
I disagree with the term to begin with. The police are not being militarized. Militarization of the police would imply crew-served weapons and infantry tactics designed to accomplish a different mission.
Right.
What the police have been doing over the last probably 12 years is a concerted effort towards specialization, meaning that we have specific missions that we have to accomplish, and some of those missions are next to impossible or they're suicide missions without the proper equipment.
Right.
And what most people perceive as being militarization is nothing but us catching up with the threat
right.
and specializing in the arenas of training and equipment.
Right. Well, and it's funny, once again, going back to historical context for this, you know, the Red Scare in the, you know, 1917, 1918, there's photos of the Boston police with, you know, potato digger machine guns on street corners waiting for rioters to show up, you know?
Yep.
It's like you look at that and then you look at, you know, the riots that occur today where the police are being fired upon from from the rioters. And, you know, what's their response? Oh, here, have some more tear gas, which I think is incredibly measured personally.
It is, and it's designed to be that way. And most of that is a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good thing on accident.
Right.
It's occurred because lawyers have taken over law enforcement in the last probably 60 years in the liability realm.
Right.
So while I think it's a good thing, I think it's probably a good thing for the wrong reasons.
And that's... That'd be an entire show on whether or not...
Yes, it would. Well,
that'd be a very interesting existential conversation. I don't know that anyone's actually tuning in to have one of those necessarily, but...
No, that's a scotch and cigars conversation.
Yes, next time.
Yes, indeed.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think people are perceiving this specialization as militarization because... the American public has a lot to pay attention to,
right.
And they tend to break things down, and our cable news media especially tends to exacerbate this problem. Something is either a good thing or a bad thing.
Right.
There's no nuance or subtlety in any argument anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And specialized equipment in the hands of police is a nuanced conversation. There are some police departments who need it based on the threat and the mission that they have, and there are some that do not.
Right.
And that's a decision for their chiefs of police to make. And if the public aren't happy with those decisions, they have the ability to elect different city council members, county boards of commissioners, et cetera, to make decisions that they think are more in line with their community standards.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think that if the public – well, I know the public doesn't see what the police have to deal with every day,
right.
Not just the big incidents, but the small stuff, especially on the southern border, the southwest, with dealing with cartels, you are fighting a military there.
Right.
And some militarization, not just specialization, is appropriate.
One, that's where you see like patrol boats going up and down, you know, the river in Texas,
right.
with M240s mounted on either side,
right.
and, you know, twin 50s.
And then you get the dejectors who are all for that because we're protecting the border, and that's good, but... You know, let's don't militarize the police.
Well,
let's protect our borders. Let's protect our borders.
Well, whether or not protecting the border is good, I suppose, depends on what side of the issue you stand on, which, once again, I'll avoid because I don't really like to talk politics. Mm-hmm. And this show's a little bit more political than I generally like to touch upon. But I really think that even amongst the gun buying public, there is a huge level of misinformation that occurs, you know, and we'll sort of go a different direction with this. I've seen a lot of talk about, you know, unarmed individuals getting shot and people with knives getting shot, and a lot of the things that are said, and I'm sure you've seen this yourself, John, is, well, why didn't they shoot him in the arm or shoot him in the leg, or why didn't they taser them, or all sorts of things that, you know, to you and I probably sound, if we're being polite, rather foolish. What are your thoughts? It's just a complete misunderstanding of the realities of the situation, or?
That's what it is. And people don't like to think about the reality of what it means to be a police officer. The sheep are always upset with the sheepdogs. The reality is, it's very easy to get killed as a police officer if you make a bad decision.
Right.
Police officers make hundreds of decisions every day. And whether or not they shoot somebody, I tend to trust their judgment as in a large percentage of the cases.
Yeah.
Most of the public is just uninformed. They don't understand that people who are inside the U.S., people who are stabbed are much more likely to die than people who are shot, because the wounds are much more difficult to deal with. They don't understand how much damage can be caused on an officer or a member of the public with a knife by the, you know, if you allow somebody to close into that distance with you.
Right.
And they, in addition to that, they don't like to think about the reality that some people just need to be shot.
Yeah.
Their actions precipitate the officer to use deadly force. And if they weren't there doing that, they wouldn't have been shot.
When, you know, I think a really good example of this, if anyone wants to look up what happens when a police officer takes his time in making the decision to shoot someone, the murder of Kyle Dinkheller, Deputy Kyle Dinkheller.
Oh, yes.
In our circle, that video is, you know, extremely well known.
Right.
Because I want to say he's authorized to use deadly force about 30 seconds into the video. And he doesn't
probably less than that, yes.
Yeah, and he doesn't actually start shooting until about a minute 45, I want to say. And at that point, he's got an M1A pointed at him, and he ends up getting murdered on camera.
And you're just wondering what's running through his mind at that. Is he trying to outguess the people, or trying to guess what he should and shouldn't be doing?
Well, you know, I think that's yeah, go ahead.
That's part of it. And keep in mind, and what I try to educate the public when I have the opportunity on, is the police shoot far fewer people than they could.
Yes.
Most police officers are very reluctant to use any type of force, much less deadly force.
Right.
It's been my experience that even when we do end up shooting someone, it's usually later than we should have.
Right.
Usually. And part of that is it's pounded into their head. Well, that's not a fair statement. They constantly see their brothers being second-guessed, so it's led to a dangerous mentality on the part of some officers to second-guess themselves before they ever act.
Yeah.
And conversely, some officers just aren't well-trained. They don't understand the situations where it is appropriate to use force and where it is not. They don't have clear principled understanding of those types of circumstances.
Well, and there's been all sorts of research, and some of it's questionable, and I won't get into the validity of Colonel Grossman's work or not, you know, because I see either side of that argument, but I do think that there are certain people that are hesitant to cause injury to another human being, whether or not they're justified to do so, which I completely understand, but it's interesting to me when you look at the statistics of officers that are involved in one shooting, you know, how often they're involved in a second or third or fourth shooting after that. It's kind of, you know, Jared Reston being a really good example of that, and all four of his shootings were very clear cut. But, you know, after the first one and after the second one, three and four,
the learning curve goes up.
Well, I think the first time you get shot in the face, you kind of go, I don't want to get shot in the face ever again. Right. So, but,
Right. And that is a very true phenomenon. An officer's first shooting tends to break down a barrier to the application of violence when it's necessary, because they find that they're much more confident because they faced that deadly threat and prevailed. And they also have a much deeper visceral understanding of when someone is threatening their life. They're much more aware, which leads to not only, I don't want to say more uses of force, but more appropriate uses of force.
Right. Let me interrupt real quick, John, just because we have to go back to break again. We're talking with John Chapman from LMS Defense. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True Product Specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, right now we are talking with Mr. John Chapman from LMS Defense about some of the trials and tribulations that police officers face in today's world and why people just don't understand sometimes. So, anyway, John, are you still there?
I am, sir.
Perfect. So, I mean, I guess that a lot of the problem is going to stem back to people just talking about things that they don't necessarily have a clear understanding of, and maybe they think they do, which, if I remember correctly, is the Dunning-Kruger effect, which I get to run into all the time dealing with people on the internet.
Oh, yes.
all the time.
Yes. And everybody who's ever been pulled over is an expert on law enforcement tactics.
Right. You're right. You know, and that's not to say... And to be clear, too, I don't want to be, you know, issuing a blanket statement where I'm saying 100% of the time I take the side of the police, because honestly, there are times where the police are wrong, and the police are very wrong. You know, I can think of, for instance, when I want to say it was the BART officer that went to deploy a taser and deployed a firearm instead and shot the gentleman in between the shoulder blades and killed him. Yeah. Going to jail. Completely justified and warranted. You know, that's
and unfortunately, I think that was as much a training problem as it was a tactics problem.
Right.
And as a culture, law enforcement tends to look less at the training problems because they're not easily fixed.
Well, no, they're not because
that's something that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's something that the public, if the public wants to fixate on something, it should be something like that.
Yeah.
Ensuring that the police are being trained properly.
Well, and that's the interesting thing that you mentioned, because a lot of the training that probably you would suggest, or I would, having a layperson's opinion, would suggest, would, you know, would focus on things that most police administrators don't find worthwhile. You know, there are very few departments that I'm aware of that I think pay enough attention to firearms training at all, or any really use of force training in general.
Right.
You know, or if they do pay.
Well, Nate.
Go ahead.
They tend to focus on things that are quantifiable.
Right.
Teaching someone to really gunfight is not quantifiable.
No.
It doesn't have any effect on qualification scores. Teaching someone to make accurate judgments to the sudden onset of violence is not quantifiable. And that's why it's so hard to train, and that's why administrators tend to ignore it, because it can't be reduced to a performance evaluation for someone.
Right. I mean, and it's interesting, too, because arguably some of the most important things that we could teach people, you know, and how you teach someone to react and deal with stress is like, it's hard to even get, you know, you or I or anybody to agree on how that happens. You know, I've got, based off of like the training that I've gone through or the classes I've attended, I've got my own personal idea, but I'm sure they would be slightly different than yours than someone else's and all that. And that's part of the problem as well.
It is. And it takes, what it boils down to is just like the armed citizen, the police officer has to take personal responsibility for their training and their actions on the street.
Right.
And that's what the whole militarization of the police argument boils down to for me. Complaining about the militarization of the police is exactly the same argument as complaining about citizens owning M4s.
Right.
They shouldn't have that capability because it may be misused. I think a more productive sentiment from especially Second Amendment advocates, who I hear the loudest wailing about the militarization of police from, would be, how do we support our local governments to create standards that ensure that this equipment is properly used?
Right. Well, and that's, you know, whether or not there is an answer to that is questionable.
There is not.
Now,
there.
You did kind of hit on something that I'd like to explore a little bit more. You said that, as with the armed citizen, you know, part of the problem is getting the police officer to take personal interest and responsibility in their own training. How do we make that happen? I mean, do we just explain the people? Well, you can't explain it, but I mean, how do you educate people to the fact that there is a wider, broader question than what they initially think that they need to look for their own answers to?
Unfortunately, there is no blanket answer to that. It's a one cop at a time problem.
Right.
It's some people, unfortunately, are law enforcement officers because the fire department and the garbage department weren't hiring that week.
Right.
It's just an unfortunate fact of life. And those guys are never going to get it. They're only going to train when they're ordered to, and they're going to try to take sick leave for that time. They're never going to think about the job when they're off work. And they're never going to take personal responsibility for the preparedness that they have to take the actions that could be necessary to perform their mission.
Right.
So some of those people, a percentage of law enforcement in every department's a little bit different, is lost.
Yeah.
There's no fixing it. The only way to control those people is through policy and procedure and draconian disciplinary measures.
Right.
Everyone else, it just takes a training officer or a SWAT team leader or someone who they view as an expert to get them excited about it and to take interest.
Right.
Most cops will feign cynicism because they think it's a cool thing to be cynical about training or, you know,
right,
things like that. But most guys deep down really want to. They're a police officer because they believe in the priority of life.
Yeah.
And they want to They want to keep the peace, protect people's lives, and enforce the law.
Right.
And if someone tells them that those things are cool, then they will follow that person and begin to take the steps necessary to prepare themselves to actually make good decisions under stress.
Well, and it's funny you mention that too, because it seems like, and I have personal friends that are, you know, without naming any names on a radio broadcast that gets quite a few listeners at this point, you know, there are people that I think mm-hmm. of as incredibly good police officers that are retiring or switching careers simply because of mm-hmm. the administrative nature of those above them making the job unbearable, you know, which
mm-hmm. and that's a serious, serious problem. We are, since probably 2004, I've noticed a trend in administration that, and this again is not all departments, but there is a trend in the IACP, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, International Background Investigators Association, people like that, to start weeding out warriors, quote unquote. They don't necessarily want fighters,
right,
gunfighters on their staffs. They want people who are good with paperwork and people who will do the job that they're told to do, period.
Right.
And that's not a dictatorial thing. It's easier to manage those people. They don't have to be led.
Right.
And I'm sure all your listeners know the difference between management and leadership.
Hopefully some of them
real
do.
Warriors. Yeah. Real warriors have to be led, and that's a hard job, and it takes experience and time and effort. And it's just easier to hire people who you only have to manage. And you do that by washing combat veterans out on backgrounds. You do that by overdiagnosing PTSD and washing them out on psychologicals. You do that by pestering experienced veterans, veteran police officers, to quit or find something that's less of a hassle, because the job makes them miserable, not because of the job, but because of their bosses.
Right. Well, I mean, and once again, and this, you know, and I kind of like this, the show's sort of going a direction that I didn't expect it to go, as far as talking about the the wider scope of the issues that maybe some police departments are dealing with. But, I mean, you could almost make the correlation as far as in the shooting industry itself, there is, and I'd like to think it's coming back around a little bit, there's not as much entertainment as there was, you know, a couple years ago. It seems like a lot of the trainers that I really respect are starting to get attention that I think is rightly deserved. You know, Pat Rogers being a really good example of that, Steve Fisher, you guys, Craig Douglas, probably, you know, that one of the reasons why I try
and mention, doing God's work for 10 years.
Oh, yeah. You know, Craig's been around forever.
He's been ignored.
It just now seems like he's starting to get, you know, broader attention.
That's
why I try and bring him up every show that I do. I mean, is that just it? Is we just show people that, hey, this doesn't all suck. Some of it's really cool, and you probably want to pay attention to it.
Yeah, and frankly, I think the entertainment era, as I call it, from about 2006 to 2013, was a necessary evil.
Yes.
And I say this because it got people who would never think about going to a two-day carving class going to a carving class because it looked cool.
Right.
Now they've had the time to research, and they're reading the internet forums, the good ones hopefully, and they're paying attention, and they're watching YouTube videos, and they're seeing the Kyle DeFores and the Pat Rogers and the Pat McNamaras and the Steve Fishers of the world talk about what it actually means to prepare for a gunfight. They wouldn't have been prepared to receive that message without the entertainment era.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Oh, and it does. And in fairness, too, I'm friends with some of those guys. We've actually got to go to break. Right now we're talking with John Chapman, LMS Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Car Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. We're speaking with John Chapman from LMS Defense. John, are you still there?
I am, sir.
Perfect. And for those listening, I actually just posted the video link to the Deputy Denkeller murder that the Chappie and I were discussing earlier in the show. I will say that it is not an easy video for me to watch, just because you're listening to a, you know, Family Guy get murdered on camera. But I think there are a lot of lessons that can be learned if you're either a police officer or an armed citizen from watching the video. So you can check that out at the Facebook page, facebook.com/ballisticradio.
I'm glad you shared that. I appreciate it.
Well, you know,
that's a good eye opener for folks.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's, there's all sorts of instances of stuff like this happening. And, you know, it's, I think it brings to point, it kind of brings to focus an interesting point as far as, you know, people start making assumptions about the amount of time that someone has to make a decision in a situation like that. And literally the difference between a quarter or a half second of hesitation can be me posting a link of your murder on my Facebook page, or hey, you get to go home to your family at the end of the day. And I think that, I think that's something that a lot of people lose sight of, you know, and it certainly doesn't help that the media, and I unfortunately fall into the media category, though I absolutely hate that I have to say that.
You're on the good fringe.
I try my very, very best at that, but unfortunately the media does not help the situation, because we are incredibly quick to comment on stuff just simply due to the fact that if we don't comment on stuff and someone else does, well, then we didn't comment on it.
Right.
And thankfully, I don't really need to do that, because I don't talk about politics, and I I, you know, don't talk current events too often, but I understand why it happens.
Comparing yourself to some people on traditional media outlets, I don't think it's fair, John.
Well,
I mean, you have a good working knowledge of what, you know, shooting is and what getting in gunfights is about, and you have people who don't have a clue as to what it's about that just need to put a story out there.
Yeah. Hey, I've seen rubber bullets. I think these are rubber bullets on the ground. Can anyone confirm?
I think most of them just don't have any concept. It's pure ignorance of the rapidity of violence.
Right.
They don't understand how sudden it is. None of them have ever been punched in the face.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately what it takes for somebody to understand viscerally, or they can, you know, take a class and come take a shoot house and then a CQB operations course and actually feel what it feels like to experience that unexpected sudden violence that you don't have really any time to react to. It's either an appropriate response or an inappropriate response.
Right. Well, and I think one of the, for me personally, in a training context, one of the clearest examples of that, and once again, going back to Craig Douglas, I'm sorry to do this to you, John, but...
No, I love Craig.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
He is. He's a funny man, too, but I can't tell any of those stories on air. God. Anyway, wow, totally derailed me right now. There's a movie that he was a stuntman in that if you go and I'll post a link to this later, but he has a fight scene where he's wearing a black tube dress, I want to say, and a long black wig that that I think everyone needs to hear about. So I'll post that link later on.
Awesome. Craig is a drag queen.
Yes, he is, at least in the movie. I don't know about in real life, maybe. Anyway, moving forward.
Anyway.
Yeah, I was at an ECQC class, and I've told this story before too, but at one point, a guy named John Pemberton, who's a great guy that I was very thankful to get to train with, former Marine, if I remember correctly, was sitting on top of me after he disarmed me and was shooting me somewhere in the lower abdomen groin region with my own gun. And I was thinking to myself, and I was thinking to myself as every one of these sim rounds impacted that, oh, that one would have killed me. That one would have killed me. Wouldn't be having any kids after that one, you know, stuff like that. And it's funny just how quick it happened. And it was just a simple decision that I made that turned out to be not a very good one. So go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, it's hard for the public to experience that without some motivation to do so.
Right.
And I think it's like you said in the beginning of the show, we're always going to be dealing with people who don't know what they're talking about spouting off about things like this.
Right.
So,
right.
Sometimes they should just shut up and let the adults talk.
Well, I don't know if I count myself as an adult yet or not. I know people tell me I am based off of age, but I could make an argument there. But I have a really good example of that was I posted a photo of slide bite that I get pretty bad slide bite when I shoot a Glock properly. You know, it cuts my hand open, I bleed. I don't really care that much because I don't even notice it until afterwards. But a lot of the comments on there were along the lines of, well, you know, if you knew how to grip a gun properly, that wouldn't happen. And I'm just like, huh, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I should examine this. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah. So we've got about 3.5-4 minutes left, John. And, you know, once again, I appreciate coming on the show tonight. If people want to check out what you're doing or would like to go take a class with you, I know you train a lot of law enforcement and things of that nature, but you do have some open enrollment classes too. Do you happen to know your schedule off the top of your head, or am I putting you on the spot here?
My schedule is pretty closed. The only things I have available for probably the next 6 months is probably the best thing. I'm an adjunct instructor with Pat over at EAG, and we're teaching a shoot house and then a night vision operations course first week in October.
Is that going to be up at Alliance?
It is, which is an awesome facility, as you know.
Yeah, I'm actually going to try and make it up to that class. I was very, very sad that I did not get to stay for your for the UTM portion of your instruction that week when I was up there, but hopefully I will get to make it up in October.
We'll get a chance to we'll get a chance to let Steve Fisher shoot the heck out of you at some point.
Well, I know he's looking forward to it, too.
Yes, he is. We were just talking about it.
Oh, really? Great.
In addition to that, you can always check me out at lmsdefense.com. And some of my classes, most of my open enrollment classes are posted over at eagtactical.com. Or you can check me out on Facebook. Just search for John Chapman.
Okay. Perfect. Well, and I'll post a link to that too.
Awesome.
You know, any closing thoughts? I mean, what would you like to say to people without using four-letter words when this stuff comes up?
When this stuff comes up, I like to tell people, or I'd like people to think about what they're willing to do themselves to protect their liberty. Remember that freedom and liberty are different. Liberty is freedom restrained by the rights of others.
Right.
And that restraint has to exist with armed force. There's no other way to create that restraint.
Yeah.
And if they're not willing to have the police do what's necessary within reason and our Bill of Rights to restrain that freedom so that your liberty can exist intact, who exactly do you expect to do it?
Right. And
that's what I would like people to think about. Now, that does not mean that the police are always right.
No.
It means look at it through that prism.
Well, and I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that for every time we hear about someone's dog getting murdered by an overzealous police officer when maybe it didn't need to have that happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are 100 or 200 or 300 officers that put themselves at intense personal risk to mm-hmm. do good for other people.
Right. But, you know, because they believe in the priority of life.
Right.
And the vast majority of police officers do. They put the citizen's life above their own,
right.
as it should be.
Well, and that's, once again, it's something that I wish a little bit more, I wish a few more people would think about that and mm-hmm. keep in mind. Certainly, it's a conversation that I keep having over and over and over again. So that's kind of why I wanted to, you know, spend tonight's show on that just a little bit, because I don't think enough people necessarily talk about it. If they do talk about it, it's a little too pro-police without,
mm-hmm.
you know, really getting into the why behind that.
I agree completely. I was happy to be on, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, John. So hope you enjoy the rest of your evening, sir. Say hello to Chris for me, and say hello to Steve for me,
and
too.
Thank you.
Yeah, so anyway.
I will.
Take it easy. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Thanks, John.
Hey,
good night.
So, next week, once again, I've taken to scheduling guests a little later than I usually do, only because there are so many things that are happening so quickly that I kind of like getting an appropriate person on for the week's events. But anyway, not quite sure who we're going to have on next week. Remember, you can check out our website, ballisticradio.com, for all our past shows. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Hey, thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week at Ballistic Radio.